This is a Deese World production in association with Pants Pending Studios.
Hey everyone, it's Deese, and I'm here to tell you about a brand new show called Some Imperfections, the advice podcast hosted by Abby Buckenberger, Sierra Cosi, and myself. They are certified life coaches, and I'm a comedian. They'll answer all your questions about life, love, spirituality, and much more, and I'll chime in with stories about how when I was in seventh grade, my friend and I dropped acid, and then my friend tried to fight our teacher. So tune in every other Wednesday at DeeseComedy.com, IamAlliance.me, or follow us on Spotify. And go to some.imperfections on Instagram to send us your anonymous topics and questions. We'll see you there.
You are now listening to The Social Hour.
They're not PC, so if occasional foul language turns you off, then you have all been warned. This is the calm before the storm.
I'm going to find out what next week is like today, because I'm going to black out.
Get ready for the social hour.
This is The Social Hour. On today's show, comedian Maddie B. And now your host. For Valentine's Day, he doesn't want any chocolates. He'd rather you just invest your money into GameStop for him. Deese Casillas.
Malam Keen, everyone. Welcome to the show. This is The Social Hour. I'm Deese. Thanks for coming around for another episode. We've got a great one planned. This time I mean it. I say that every time, but this time I mean it, guys. Before we get into it with our guests, as usual, go to DeeseComedy.com. Check out all the events coming up. We do have some live events coming back around the Northwest and the region, and I'll be on the road hitting here soon, as well as the new show, the Dollar Bin Podcast, new episodes every Friday with some goodies on the video version on YouTube, so follow us there. And for exclusive content, always go to Patreon.com/DeeseComedy and more, guys. All right, that's it. That's all the commercials. We're going to get that out of the way. We're going to get right into it because we have limited time with our guest today, all the way from Boston. Give it up for comedian Maddie B, everyone. Maddie, how you doing this morning?
Oh, my God. It is...
It's afternoon where you are, I guess.
It's 3:30 p.m. here. There's snow falling. And I am enjoying it.
Good.
It's a good view.
Yeah. Also, I should quantify. Nowhere in America is it actually morning anymore right now. It's 12:30 where I am too. Like that's the most stand-up comedian thing to say. It's 12:30. Be like, damn, this morning is crazy. Like it's afternoon, you piece of shit. God damn.
Well, I'm actually more of a morning person myself, so it's nighttime for me.
Is it? are you naturally a morning person? You just don't like not just an early bird guy?
I don't really like the term natural. I much prefer the term organic.
Sure. Okay.
No,
pesticide free.
I do get up pretty early. I'm not one that can stay up very late. I've never been like that. I've always been someone that's in bed by like 10 or 10:30. So yeah, I would say, yeah, I'm definitely a morning person.
Are you like a solid, do you like 8 hours of sleep? Do you got to get that kind of sleep, or what are you clocking in there going to bed at 10:30?
I mean, it really depends. If I need to be awake, if I'm like doing something like running around and doing something, yes, I can like last off of like 2 or 3 hours of sleep, but pretty promptly around like 10 or 10:30, I'll just fall asleep if I'm watching TV and then I'll hopefully sleep through the night.
And then are you like, what are you like, 8 o'clock, 6 o'clock? What time are you getting up at that? If you get, I mean,
at like 5:20.
Okay, so you're getting like 6.5, 7 hours of sleep. That's good.
Yeah, it's more than most.
I feel like that's, I don't know about you, I'm like 6.5 is my sweet spot. If I get more than that, I kind of start to feel a little groggy. If I get less than that, I can definitely feel the effects of not really. Like, less than 6, I'm like, all right, this is noticeable.
Not 6.5, but, you know.
6.5 will do in a pinch. It's, you know.
Yeah, exactly. It's not quite enough for me, but it will definitely make me groggy.
Isn't it interesting? The later you go, the later you're up at night, the less you're willing to take. You just become willing. Like, I guess this will do. It's gonna have to do. Let's see.
Yeah, no, but the last time I phrased it like that, I instinctually said that'll do, pig, and I never heard from him again.
They got to be able to take it if they're gonna, in more ways than one, if they're gonna, you know, deal with it, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So you're early bird. Why? You always been early bird. That's interesting. Most creatives, I feel like, are you know, late night people. That's kind of the realm of the tortured soul, they say.
Well, I mean, I think that's just depends on when you like to be tortured.
Yeah,
like a lot of people like darkness. I like to see the torture happening,
right? You want to know when it's coming. That masochism really comes out.
Exactly. I much prefer being able to say bad morning than bad night.
Okay,
if that makes sense. Yeah. You know,
the now in have you always lived in Boston? Are you from that area, or what are you?
So I am from a suburb of Boston, or a suburb in Massachusetts. It's called Sharon, Massachusetts.
Okay.
I spent my first 18 years there. Then I moved to Burlington, Vermont for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
I went to University of Vermont, craziest 2 years of my life. And then after that, I moved back home. I did a summer in Nantucket. And then shortly after that, I moved to Fresno, California.
Jesus Christ, I'm sorry. That's,
I know, that's pretty much what everyone else says.
As someone who grew up in LA and has, you know, family that I never call that lives in Fresno, because they fucking make poor choices like living in Fresno. What the hell? What a culture shock. Had you been to Fresno before you moved there? What prompted that?
I mean, the only thing that anyone could answer is either a high paying job or a relationship. And let me tell you, I do not have the educational attainment for a high paying job. So it was a relationship.
Oh, and it didn't work out?
Oh, hell no. It was in Fresno.
Yeah, there's not a good enough relationship to keep me in Fresno. There's nothing that could make me stay. The only thing that make me stay in Fresno is jail. And even then I'd Epstein myself. How long were you in Fresno?
Almost 4 years.
Jeez, that's a pretty good, that's a haul, man.
I mean, yeah, most jail sentences are at least 2. I'm kidding.
What was your first kind of reaction when you got to Fresno?
Okay, so I like to tell like my story of when I got to see what the outside world of Fresno actually was, because I didn't know anyone when I first moved there. So I pretty much spent my whole time in the apartment that I was in, and you know, I was in a gated community in like Northside, Northwest. So like it was a really nice area. And then I made a friend, and we started like going out into like the inner city of Fresno, and we went to this Planned Parenthood. I know, fun field trip.
It's a good time.
But he needed a ride. He didn't have a car. So I was like, yeah, I'll take you. Like, it's your health. Like, of course I care. So I brought him to Planned Parenthood, and he needed to get a test done. And at this Planned Parenthood, I was watching TV, and an episode of Cops comes on. And that episode of Cops took place down the street from the Planned Parenthood.
Oh yeah, that's. I feel like most like Fresno and Tacoma, Washington, is where most of Cops is filmed. Those are the two places.
It's, yeah. I It definitely made me think, you know, like, oh, and also I saw like a pregnant woman smoking a cigarette outside while this episode of Gossip was going on. I was like, where am I?
Yeah, that sounds like Fresno. That's like the city crest for Fresno. It's just a pregnant woman smoking a cigarette. That's the city's flag right there.
That's the city flag. The city crest is a Ford Mustang symbol.
Yeah. With like only three.
What are you gonna do with a Ford Mustang? You live in a grid system with a red light every like quarter of a mile.
Yeah, you gotta go out in the desert for that shit. When you left Fresno, like I assume you left Fresno because your relationship didn't work out. What was there any consideration to stay in there? Was it just like get me the fuck out of here?
So I had considered going somewhere like LA or San Francisco, and I took great consideration to it, but I'd learned a lot, and I thought, you know, I'm gonna just go back where I have family and a lot of friends and try my luck back in Massachusetts, because I hadn't really lived as an adult around back in my hometown and on my own just yet. So I thought, I'm gonna get out of here. It definitely like it was solidified for me leaving Fresno because my best friend who I had like come to know and love was like, hey, I'm moving to the East Coast. And I'm like, okay, that's my cue to go.
Yeah, it turns out I am too again. Yeah, good call, man. The Fresno's I grew up in LA and been all over California, and I don't think you could pay me enough to move back there. It would have to be, I mean, you could, but that number is real high. Real high.
And that's just to be able to afford a studio.
Yeah, no shit. That's what I'm saying. Like when I left there, you know, I haven't lived there in almost a decade now. I mean, I was like, you'd have to, I mean, now I'd have to be making like $500,000 a year to feel like I could want to live there. Cause that's the only way to live there is if you feel like you're totally comfortable and able to do everything and not worried about money and not feeling like, cause everything's so fucking expensive.
Yeah. I mean, it's not that much different being in Boston.
I suppose that's true.
But yeah, it's very expensive out here. The pandemic definitely helped. Rent is okay.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I'd rather if I were to like kind of try and sacrifice my life and make it out there and not have any family to fall back on, I'm just like that for me is not a bold choice.
Yeah, it seems crazy. I guess, you know, Boston's got to be, I never thought of, Boston's got to be super expensive too. I mean, I went to Boston, spent a couple weeks out there years ago. I mean, we're talking, this was, what year is it? This was probably before 9/11. So okay. Yeah, because I flew with pot. I just took pot with me. But I mean, it was like, because my buddy, one of my best buddies I grew up with, he was born and raised in like Framingham, I think. Is that a place?
Framingham, okay, yeah.
I think that area, you know, he's kind of been, you know, his family all in Boston. So I was there for a couple weeks. So I don't know what kind of, I mean, I was like about, I don't know, I was not even 21 probably at the time. But yeah, I mean, what's it to do out there? Boston? I don't know, man. I feel like I didn't get the experience. I didn't get to love it the way people talk about it. Is it?
Boston has a lot to give. I mean, you can go out to the Boston Commons. It's a beautiful park. Surrounding the areas are a lot of amazing bars. And there's one notable in Downtown Crossing, which is a great area. There's one notable outdoor bookstore that usually pops up around the summertime that I really like. But with Corona right now, I mean, there's not much going on. You can go to a restaurant.
That's more than you can do in Washington right now.
They're really small. I'm sorry?
I said that's more than you can do in Washington right now.
Yeah, I mean, we're able to do some, we're getting better with our numbers right now. I think the best thing though to do in Massachusetts is not actually in the city.
Yeah.
It's everything around it, because there's so many national parks and state parks and hiking opportunities,
yeah,
that you can just escape. Even though Massachusetts is like a really small state, you can still go like an hour and a half away and find yourself lost in the woods in a new place, like one of which is Purgatory Chasm, which I really enjoy.
Sounds like a great stripper name. That's coming to the stage, Purgatory Chasm.
and her sister Limbo Tata.
Like a private dance, let's do it. I did feel the countryside was beautiful when I was in Boston. I didn't love the city the way people feel like I should. I like, everyone loves the city a lot more than I felt like I loved the city.
Being someone who's lived in, not just lived, but has visited so many different cities.
Yeah.
I always find myself wanting to be in nature where I reside, and yeah, then city where I want to escape that, because there's so much going on. Even though now I do live in a city and I do very much so love it.
Yeah.
I think that being able to visit the entertainment instead of live and entertainment, yeah, a little bit more special.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one of the nice things I always say about where I live in Spokane, Washington. We're the second biggest city in Washington state outside of Seattle, but we are on completely the opposite side of the state. I mean, we're bordered up to Idaho. We have basically everything, all the good stuff you'd want from a big city, but also I can drive 20 minutes in any direction and kind of be in the middle of nowhere. So you kind of have that, all those benefits, you know. I like that. And that sounds like what's nice about Boston, the East Coast, is there's these big cities, but yeah, there is so much countryside where you can just kind of get out and escape.
You have the ability to be within the city and not even have a car and still get there too, which I think is incredible.
Yeah.
Like, the public transportation here is amazing when it's reliable. I don't know. I think that it's not so much so whether or not you have the city or the nature aspect. I think Massachusetts as a whole is just a very educated and very liberal and understanding,
yeah,
area. Like, you'll have your pockets of where you'll find like really heavy right wingers,
yeah,
and such. But there's a comfort knowing that, you know, we have amazing hospitals and healthcare. We have amazing educational systems.
Yeah.
We have so many schools. I live right next to Boston College, and that's like one of like five,
right,
that are within like a 15-mile radius.
Yeah.
When I'm in Boston, I feel a very large sense of camaraderie, no matter where you go, because it's often very like, well, we're working towards the health of others, not,
yeah,
necessarily just our health and well-being. Like, it's very much so like a shared kumbaya.
Yeah. That's one of the things I always say, like, because I mean, people who live, I mean, not that there's not people that move to Boston, but you know, a lot of people from Boston stay in Boston, or generations of people in Boston, you know, their communities. Whereas like in LA, almost everyone is a transplant, and nobody gives a shit about LA, yeah, or the other people who live there, and they all just move there to try to become something. So they're just like self-absorbed narcissists that all live in the same city together, and it's just like a shit show, you know. So yeah, it's very different than places like what you're describing, it seems like.
Well, I mean, I guess you know, with LA, you have the weather to do that. You have that beautiful weather where you can be like, I can be, you know, established and out of my way, and just everyone needs to listen to me in Boston. It's like, it's the winter. You better find a group of people to huddle around.
Right. Yeah. You need a group of people to not die with. So.
Exactly.
Yeah. So you said you do comedy out there. Did you start comedy in Boston or?
So I started in Fresno, which was really interesting, but also how I started comedy was I went to cosmetology school, and I had a client of mine from school who was also a friend. He messaged me and he was like, hey, I'm doing an open mic. Like, I really want you to come and like see me. I was like, hell yeah, I'll come and see you. I'll support you. You support my craft, I'll support yours. And I went, and he was the most misogynistic, horrible person. When it came to write, like, I'm like, those thoughts should be kept in a diary and they should not be said out loud on a stage. But then after that, I was like, holy shit, I could do this.
Yeah.
So I started to do it, and I gained a lot of, actually, the first time I ever did a set, I went up, I did 5 minutes. It was an open mic at a small Italian restaurant called the Chico's in Old Town Clovis, which is known for in like the subset or like the suburb of Fresno. Very white. It's called Old Town Clovis. It's like like a cowboy city or suburb. I did a set there, and I got off stage, and three people came up to me and they were like, holy shit, how long have you been doing this? And I was like, today.
Yeah. 5 minutes, it turns out.
Yeah, exactly. And I was like, all right. I think I've got something here. Because I had always done improv growing up. I did acting growing up. I really liked the arts and theater.
Yeah.
And being out there. And I was always a very, like, funny person with all of my friends, always making them laugh. And I really enjoyed laughter. And I was like, oh, my God, like, I can bring that to a space that I command.
Yeah.
And that's pretty cool. So I started about 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Started right before I left Fresno. I did about 6-7 months. Did one show as a featured comic. Most of the time it was like a feature here and there at like the open mics that I did. I hosted a couple times. I now host a show of my own called Maddie B's Morning Mic. And I did get invited by David Smalley, who is, he works at the Comedy Store in LA. I got invited to do a set with him, but it was the week that I was moving back home.
Oh, shit.
Right before I was able to start getting into the LA comedy scene, I relocated to Boston. And then that was November of 2019.
Yeah, things changed quickly after that.
Oh yeah, I did one open mic in Boston, and it was good, don't get me wrong, but then I spent the rest of my days in my parents'
indoors. That's that's rough, because I'm sure Boston, you know, once it opens up again, obviously has a well storied history of being a great comedy town. It's funny you say improv. I did a lot of improv growing up. I love that story, because I've said for years, I used to do improv also, and I've said for years that improv is a great base for being a stand-up comic. If you can get some improv chops, even just a little bit improv acting, when you get on stage, you're already like, you're not worried about performing in your stage presence. So you have one thing that a lot of people have, like good jokes, they just don't, their stage presence is shit. So, you know, if you have good stage presence, you can not, and I don't take this in the spirit it's intended, I don't mean you necessarily, but you can make lesser jokes better by just kind of selling it with your performance, you know?
Right.
And I mean, and if you're actually funny on top of that, as I'm sure you are, then it's like, you're just killing it from the start.
I have an example of that, and I agree 100% with what you're saying. It really is like you could have someone go up there and say the same exact thing as the person who went up before them, but with a different inflection and a different tone and a different like acting style.
Yeah.
And it could completely overturn a room, whereas the person before them, it fell flat. It's about, I mean, delivery.
Absolutely. That is,
delivery is 95% of the job of a joke.
Yeah.
And
oh, yeah.
I think that, how do I put this? Oh, there was one time, I was really starting to get into it. I had about 10 minutes of material. This was like really early on. I was asked to do a feature, and I forgot my set. I completely forgot. I was like, I've been doing this for like 2 months. Like, what the hell is wrong with me? I go up and I say the same jokes every day. So I just thought about it and I started being really over the top, but just not really knowing what I was going to say next. It was my improv training that came out. And it happened to be Yom Kippur, which is the day of repentance for Jews.
Uh-huh.
So how I handled it was I was like, oh my gosh, you guys, it is Yom Kippur. And for those of you that don't know it, it's the one day of the year that the Jews actually say sorry. So, you know, I'm so sorry, but I totally forgot my set. So I'm just going to tell you guys like things that I'm sorry for this year. And like I went off of that and I just paced around and I started thinking about all the fucked up things that I had done that year. And I was like, yeah, you know what? This is gonna work. It's gonna be fine, and it did. It worked out great.
Yeah, that's one of the benefits of having that to fall back on is if you forget something or if there's anything interruptions with the crowd, like your ability to think on the fly is so crucial when doing comedy.
It's hard. It's definitely harder with crowd work, though. Is that that's the one key aspect that I have to kind of hone in on.
Yeah,
be ready for anything.
Well, you know, but you know that improv background makes your mind move fast enough where you're gonna, you know, you'd be fine. It's funny, I'm actually, I teach a 8-week comedy course, and tonight my classes are Tuesdays as we record this, and I've got tonight we're doing intro to improv. So yeah, any tips for the kids kids, they're all adults, but what would a tip for Maddie B for improv be for the gang tonight?
So when it comes to improv, and this will sound redundant, but let me explain.
Sure.
Expect the unexpected, and that's not expecting it from the other person, that's expecting it from yourself.
Oh, yeah, that's good advice.
The way that you can best do improv is if you do not put an expectation on where you're going to go with something. However, once you create an idea, a thought, a framework, let yourself roll with it.
Yeah.
There's nothing that can stop you from expanding on it, because that there will always be an idea there.
Yeah.
But you just have to say it. You have to be forward thinking. You have to go along with it and expect yourself to say something you would never even think of. Like one time in improv, we were doing this. I forget the name of the game. But essentially, we had this one scene that was going so terribly. And it was about two people in a restaurant. And in improv, one of the rules is you can't say no to something. So the waiter asked us, would you like the spaghetti? Yes. Would you like the salad? Yes. It was just one thought after another.
Yeah.
And finally, I just spoke up and I said, could you bring out the first course, please, to move along?
Yeah.
This whole scene was built up about a man and a woman going on a date to a restaurant. And we got stuck for 10 minutes with a waiter.
Yeah.
So finally, when the first course comes out, I just stand up and I say, I'm a food inspector. What is all of this? And we completely changed it.
Yeah.
And it's when you realize an idea is dead, expect the unexpected.
Right.
Revive it.
Yeah. Be willing to go any direction. I think one of the crucial things you said is that don't plan for the, you know, expect the unexpected. Like, don't, the minute you like start try to create like forced jokes, you just have to let stuff build and come. If you have an idea in your head before things even happen, you're gonna force something into a situation that isn't gonna work. You just need to let it kind of breathe and build, and yeah, like you said, always, you know, of course, always say yes, and be specific. You know, be specific. Like I always tell them, like, you know, don't be a bone doctor. Be a pinky bone doctor, you know, like that's take whatever idea you have and take it a step farther. Cause that's initially funnier and crazier, you know, like what is a pinky bone doctor? You know, that's a very special.
Right.
So,
right. Yeah. It's a very meta, or should I say metacarpal idea.
Yeah. Nice. Very, very nicely done. So you do this, Mike, Monday mornings, is it? Or at 11 a.m.?
11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Eastern yep. Standard Time. So, man, people on the West Coast would have to get up at 7?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I do it because, like, as I said before, you know, I was...
Or 8, I guess, yeah.
I was very much so... I am very much so a morning person.
Yeah.
And I would sign up for all of these open mics that would be happening at like 10, 11, 12 a.m. or 10 p.m., 11 p.m., 12 a.m. and I'd fall asleep.
Yeah.
I like, and mind you, you know, one of the funniest times I've ever been was when I slept during an open mic and I snored. because the person running the mic didn't have it so that when the host leaves, the mic ends. So it was a Zoom call on Facebook Live,
yeah.
And when the host left, it just went on me, and I was snoring for 10 minutes on Facebook Live before my computer died and the whole thing, like, shut
down.
It was
done.
So, yeah, I thought, why not bring this to the mornings? Because I know that there are people that are like me that wake up early, and they're like, oh, I want something to do, and...
Yeah,
11 a.m. for me, that's like, that's peak hour of like, all right, like I've done my stuff in the morning. I'm like ready to go.
Yeah. So what, how many comics do you have on it each week? What kind of audience are you getting for that? Or
It's very mixed. It really depends on who it reaches that week. It is the morning. So it,
sure.
It has more of a presence. For example, when we did Martin Luther King Day recently.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of my idea with when there's a Monday holiday, it can be any amount of comics because a lot of people have that Monday off.
Yeah.
And a lot of places are closed, and 11 a.m. is like just past that time when people have slept in.
Yeah.
So on Martin Luther King Day, we had almost 20 comics. But on a regular day, it's usually up to 10, 5 minutes each.
Okay.
It's not, there's no theme to it. There isn't any requirement. I just want a space for comedians to be able to work their sets, especially for those that don't feel like they can be up late.
Yeah.
There are a lot of people, especially with the pandemic, that had to take night shift jobs.
Oh, yeah.
Change up their work schedule. And it suffers. Like, they don't have that place where they can actually work out their material. And I've never heard... I mean, I never even heard of an in-person place that did things in the morning. Everything.
Yeah.
That
yeah. I haven't either. That's, but, you know, there's gotta be a market for it, right? Yeah. Like you said, there's comedians who have different schedules. Not all of us can be out till, all hours of the evening.
Right. Yeah.
So
well, I don't know. It spoke to me.
Yeah. I mean, what's it been like doing mics virtually for you? Have you felt that you've been, obviously you've been doing it, so it's working in some ways. I mean, it's different than live in person, obviously.
So I think that this kind of comes back to how we're able to improv stuff and use that with our affect. That's how it changes when we do the improv. Like, oh yeah, we can make something really funny as long as like we deliver it well.
Yeah.
And that's what doesn't translate on Zoom.
Yeah.
If you don't look prepared or have your set memorized, then it just doesn't come off. Because while I enjoy Zoom comedy, don't get me wrong, it's been a majority of what I've done with comedy, with when I started and how things have ended up.
Sure.
I do believe that there is that lack of, what's the word I'm looking for, the turn of phrase? It's infectious laughter.
Sure.
Like when you're bombing on stage and you're in person and you are just trying to grab at things,
yeah,
and you look like an idiot, that like look is very funny. Because you're all witnessing it, and like people are gonna start to laugh, and like they're gonna catch on to your laughter, and
yeah,
it starts growing. Whereas with Zoom comedy, it's, you don't have that person next to you. It is on a screen, so that physical connection and that reverberation of sound, like it's not as natural, so it doesn't cause the natural reactions that we hope. So I think it's good for making sure that you know what you're doing to a T.
Yeah.
But also it gives you a really good sense of how to go on while you're bombing.
Sure. Yeah.
It builds that courage. As long as you don't let it get to you, it gives you the sense of, I know what I'm doing and I just need to keep moving along.
Yeah.
With what I'm going to say. And for me, that helped, because there are some things that I was like, oh, this, I feel bad about this, or I don't know if this is funny or not, or I'm not getting enough of a reaction. But it helped me perfect that.
Yeah.
It helped me perfect it and not feel bad about it, because it was going to happen either way. Like, either they're going to laugh or not.
Yeah. How do you think that'll translate when live comedy comes back? I mean, if you've done so much virtually, you know, there's going to be some kind of shifting of how it works live. I mean, you know.
I think it'll be easier for me personally. I have the stage presence. I know that I am very animated with my movements and very animated when I talk. So I think that'll translate a lot better.
Yeah.
But I don't know. We'll just have to find out. Like that. I also know I'll probably, you know, have to walk around more because my legs have turned to noodles.
Sure.
So it's
like, get a rascal. Just get a little hover around and you can, you know, motorized wheelchair around there. Be part of your shtick. When is Boston opening back up? Do they have any, you can do, restaurants are open. I mean, is there any word about when they might be able to open back up for something like comedy?
I mean, I follow like the Worcester Comedy Collective and Boston Comedians. And I know that one place was offered to do an in-person open mic, and then the person like canceled it, you know, just hours before it was supposed to start.
Oh, man.
And then I do know places in Worcester County that are still doing it. But with the way that I go about like COVID, the most exposure that I give myself is my job.
Yeah.
So I'm personally not comfortable going and doing it. So I don't know when, I don't think it's much of a question of when are things going to open back up. I think it's a question of when are people going to be vaccinated? Because that, people are antsy enough. They want to do these things. They want to be able to. Some of them even have the opportunity.
Yeah.
But whether or not it's smart to do it is the bigger question. So, and it's not. I personally don't think it's a good idea to be going out in these groups. I think you're better off doing a Zoom mic right now for the time being. I haven't been to a bar in God knows how long.
Probably over a year now.
Yeah. Ouch. Yeah. Yeah. Oh my God.
I mean, or at least getting close, because what was it, was sometime in March when they kind of mid-March when they put in the lockdown, the original. So it's probably close to a year, maybe not quite a
year.
Yeah,
close to a year. Actually, now that I think about it, about like a week or two before all this happened, I was at a bar in Providence. So yeah, it's like almost close to a year.
You're just about a year. It's wild to think that this we had a year of whatever the fuck this has been. So what about during this time this last year? I mean, you've been real cautious, you've said. What have you been doing to stay busy? Found any new hobbies? Anything, you know, rediscovered anything you love? What have you been doing?
So I got an Amazon Prime account. No, I'm just kidding. I use my boyfriend.
Work smarter, not harder.
Exactly. No, I definitely started reading more, which was, you know, I took a break from that for a while. I'm starting to think back and I'm like, wow, I'm a lazy piece of shit. I got back into photography. That's something that I used to do a lot of growing up. I got one of those like instant cameras, and I've been taking pictures of what's around me and not people because COVID.
Yeah.
I definitely, one thing that I did was I reconnected with my college friends and like our friend group. And when we did that, right when I moved back home, we started to hang out with each other more and more, and because we're like all kind of in the same circle and live in the same area, we were able to keep that up. So I think that despite the fact that we had to socially distance from a lot of people, we were able to rekindle like a really big bond that we had with one another. So like rediscovering old friends was a big part of this. I started playing a lot more video games, that's for sure. Makes me, you know, feel like I am running around in the outside.
Yeah, something.
Yeah. I discovered that I don't like vodka.
have you upped your alcohol intake during this time?
Oh my God, it was, God.
Is that why you're going to bed so early? You're not going to sleep, just passing out drunk at 10 o'clock. He's like, listen, I can't make it to midnight again. This pop off is getting to my head.
No, oh God, please, I have standards. I definitely started drinking more. We like, especially when I was living with my parents. When we were in quarantine, like we had like a family liquor order, and I was the young one, so they were like, "Go forage," and they sent me out because I'm the spry one. I got more into fitness. I've been like taking care of myself better with fitness.
That's good.
I started rock climbing, which is great. I really enjoyed that, and I started writing more poetry and not just like comedy, because for like something that I speak upon a lot with people, like an observation about comedians is that you can be an extremely famous comedian but only have a special or like an hour-long set that's like on Netflix or something like that once every 3 years.
Yeah.
And the reason behind that is because for someone to do comedy, life has to happen.
Yeah.
You have to have something to laugh at. You have to be able to take something that's occurred to you or occurred to someone else that you know. An experience has to occur, and then you have to shed a different light or your own take on the experience. And also, I mean, to be funny, you have to make sure you do it well.
Yeah.
And a lot of people that I know are able to do this, take any sort of situation and make light of it or make a joke about it. But the thing is, not a lot is going on.
Yeah.
So there's not much observation to be made. I mean, I've heard so many coronavirus jokes that this,
oh yeah,
this isn't an observation. This is like a stake in the coffin.
Yeah. Well, and everyone is living the same thing. There's no different perspectives, and like,
unless you live in Florida,
yeah, right, or Idaho, they got freedom, Jesus, and guns. They don't have COVID. it's true, man. Yeah. There's nothing. There's nothing else. I mean, they don't give a shit. They never close down anything over there. But that's probably how I ended up with COVID. It was definitely in Idaho.
Did you get COVID?
I did. Yeah, back in October.
You were early.
Yeah, I never, for, well, shouldn't say never, for a couple months at the beginning, but we kept doing live shows in Idaho and Montana almost this whole time. Montana was doing like for a couple months they quit. Then they're like half capacity they went to, which is, you know, mask mandates and capacity regulations. Idaho was like, whatever. And I did like a five-day run in Idaho and Montana, and all the shows were sold out. Just, I mean, 100+ people at every, you know, and then I'm like, and I got back and a couple days later I was like, ugh, I think I feel shitty. But it wasn't that bad for me. Honestly, it wasn't that bad. It was very, very, I had a couple days of kind of a bad cough, and I'm like, this is kind of lagging. This is kind of hanging around. Then I had like 2 days of really bad body aches. But I only had the body aches. Like, I didn't have a temperature. I didn't have any other symptoms. And then, like, day five, I woke up and I couldn't taste shit. And I'm like, all right, I should get tested.
Why were you tasting shit in the first place?
Well, you know, it's a downed economy. I'm not working as much as I used to. so, yeah, for me, it was like, whatever. It was fine. I got through it quick.
That's good.
But yeah, what the fuck were we talking about? Something else I was getting used to. I said something I thought I had an idea, but I don't fucking know.
It was something along the lines of like, what do you think is going to open back up? And
we were
past that. Oh man.
I don't know now.
I'm sorry. I'm sundowning. It's past.
I know, right? Yeah. You gotta hit Denny's, get your eggs over and moons over my hammy and call it a day. all right. Well, Maddie, tell everyone how they can sign up for the 11 a.m. morning mic, Monday morning mic, if they want to do it, and how to do that. The details.
So Maddie B's morning mic is, if you're a member of Displaced Comedians, you can find the link there. And other than that, right now it's not really traveling outside of Displaced.
Yeah.
It's still a mic in the making, okay, as I like to say. But I definitely will have details to come, of which I'd be more than happy to share them with you.
Yeah, absolutely.
One second.
Yeah. Da, 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 da.
Yeah. But yeah, it's a great time. It's a morning show, and it's made for the morning people.
All right. Well, if you are a part of Displaced Comedians, check it out. Get up in the morning, do some comedy, hit some more mics, and be ready for when the world comes back. Maddie, I know you got to go, so we'll let you get out of here. Tell everyone where they can find you, social media, if you want them to follow you, anything like that.
Absolutely. So I'm available on Facebook, Matthew Lopez. You'll know it's me because I have red hair, I'm Jewish, and I'm very flamboyant, and you can tell all of these things from my profile picture. I also am available on Instagram at Mr. Bropez, which is MR Bro and the candy Pez. I also am available at its_gingertime. That's my comedy page.
All right.
I have yet to really get into it, but there's a picture of me dressed up as Linda from Bob's Burgers. So that's how you know it's me. And my Snapchat is at itsgingertime as well. And my Venmo is at itsgingertime.
That's so the most important one.
Well, I wouldn't say it's the most important one, but it's definitely the one that gets me from point A to B.
Perfect. All right. Well, everyone, keep an eye out for Maddie when live stuff comes back. I'm sure you'll see him cruising around the Boston scene and East Coast, so as well as more, and hopefully for his sake, never going back to Fresno, California. all right. Well, hey, Maddie, I thank you for doing this. And once comedy comes back, we'll have to do this again, catch up, see how things are going over there on the East Coast for you.
Yeah, I would love that. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you very much. And guys, as for me, again, go to deucecomedy.com, check out everything going on. And don't forget to check out pantspending.com, see what's going on the network over there, too. We've got some stuff moving around. As for the social hour, that's it. I've been Deuce. This is for Maddie. Thank you very much, guys. And we will see you next week.